Hey, it's Desiree. Do you have a question you want answered on the podcast? Well, email us at fadersuppodcast@yahoo.com or DM us on Instagram at fadersuppodcast.
This is the Faders Up Podcast.
Welcome to the Faders Up Podcast. I'm Czar.
I'm Pat.
I'm Desiree.
It's your boy, Yo Shay. What it do?
And this is a podcast about pro audio and beyond. You have a question you want answered on the podcast, you can reach us at fadersuppodcast@yahoo.com. You can reach us on our Facebook group at Faders Up Podcast and on Instagram at Faders Up Podcast. And if you're on Apple Podcast, please rate and review us. We'd love to hear your feedback. And all guests and hosts that appear on the show will be in the show notes. So this episode, we're going to discuss, which is one of the episodes from the Netflix docuseries, This Is Pop, on T-Pain, where Usher told T-Pain that he ruined music. So we're going to discuss, did T-Pain ruin music?
And hold on. Like, so give a little context in case people haven't seen the show. Like, tell us about the show and then exactly what did how did he say it to him? Because that sound like straight up just shots fired, if that's the way it came off.
Well, we can do that when we get to that part.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. So before we get into that, we will discuss a giveaway that we will be doing. So make sure that you join or be active in our Facebook group, because this is where this giveaway will be happening. But in cleaning up my studio, I found like 3 pair of headphones unopened that I've never used, that were just an impulse buy that I bought. So I figured, why not give these away? So we'll be giving away 1 pair soon. So just stay tuned to the Facebook group to get the details on that.
I'm going in there.
Pat is petty. Petty
might
Pat.
Might as well.
Alias name. I'm going to create a whole Facebook profile and everything. I'm going to catfish somebody.
Hey, what kind of headphones are there, or do we have to wait for that announcement?
Sennheisers.
What, 280s?
That sounds right. I'd have to look at them. I'm not sure. Two pair are Sennheisers, and 1 pair is AKG.
What model number?
I don't know.
Bro, man, your mind was thinking about it too. Stop playing, bro. I seen your brain start to form a thought.
You should probably just record an outtake of the giveaway at this point, because I wouldn't want to enter a giveaway with all this. Like, what's the model number? Shit, I don't know. I found them in my room, and I'm giving them away. Oh, so
I mean, not the model number,
I
like
used
a long
about
number.
10 years ago,
I ain't that old. So, besides the giveaway, that we're gonna get on into our regular segment of who's been pushing Faders Up, where we just briefly discuss what we've been working on. Desiree, how you been pushing Faders Up?
I don't know. That's a weird question right now. I've been pushing Faders
Up.
Phone faders.
What does that mean?
You just got your phone back.
Oh, yeah. My phone broke while I was at the beach. Well, my screen broke. My phone worked, but I did get my phone back. Long story short, I now have 2 phones. So
I got 2.
Kevin Gates.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. Okay.
Pat just said Kevin Gates. I know. I was about to jam with you, but then you stopped. So
I know, because
it's kind of on you.
I know, because it was too quiet. Like, I was expecting people to jump in immediately.
Nah, you got to do you, bro. And that's what I've been learning. Like,
true.
You know, you just really have to do you. So that's what I have been doing. My birthday is coming up, so I haven't really been doing much musically other than continuing lessons. Yep, hitting the big 2-9.
Ooh, you're so young.
Saturday. I appreciate that perspective. I do. Because I feel old. I feel very old. I feel so grown up. I sold my Voice Live Touch 2. I still hadn't gotten the SP yet. I sold it just so I could go buy that. And I ended up spending that money on other things. But that just goes to show, you know, just getting older, maturing a little bit. But I'm keeping up with lessons, keeping up with voice lessons, piano lessons. Now I'm going to make some like more minor upgrades, which will probably be like my last bit of upgrades for the year, like as far as software, some plugins I've been wanting, and really just start focusing on, hopefully they're available soon. I've been looking at DJ Tech Tools MIDI Fighter Finger. It's pretty much a 4x4 grid of encoders. So it's 16 encoders on the, this little, like, so cute box, and is pretty much a controller. And I would want that to kind of be able to DJ my own beats, which is what I intended to do with the SP404. But I'll probably just put that on the back burner because the MIDI Finger Fighter is cheaper, and I can pretty much do a lot more with that working in the box versus using a standalone sampler. So plan on getting that, and that's going to be sick, and just really looking forward to taking this vision in my head and making it something real. I'm not really trying to work with artists like that, and I say that lovingly. I love artists. I'm starting to understand them now that I want to pursue performing more, because it's a very vulnerable situation. But it's so difficult dealing with artists. You're just sitting on your craft. Like, I just really want people to hear this music at this point. I don't care if there are words to it or not. I can, you know, continue to add words to my own stuff. But I find that when other people add words to my beats, it's like way better, and vice versa. I can't write to my own compositions. I don't know why. But yeah, you know, I'm just kind of taking the more producer artist approach to music versus being just a producer and then trying to find artists. This doesn't excite me like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you have any idea how long those are back ordered for? The, I don't want to say the wrong name,
the MIDI Finger Fighter. I think it's the Twister. Yeah, it's such a tongue tie. And they have another device too that has a similar name. But no, they're sold out right now. Every time I chat with them, they're like, oh, they'll be available, you know, soon. They've even told me maybe sometime this week, which at the time of this recording, is like the last week of August, going on the first weeks of September. So they said they'd have them sometime this week.
Define soon, sir.
Right. Like, just give us your email. We'll let you know. I'm like, I don't have time for that. I just need a time, you know, even though I'll wait for it. I'd rather know when, you know, so I can save up, or, you know, just for whatever.
And then are they taking pre-orders?
Nah. They sell out too. Like, I was looking online. They sell out of this product regularly. And it's a small company too. Mm-hmm. I just came across them actually earlier this year. So like they had sold out of them back in April. And then sold out of them again, you know, within the past several weeks. So,
yeah. So you're really going to have to stock them then. Because, I mean, if you could pre-order it, then, you know, hey, mm-hmm. here's a card number. Just send it to me when it's ready. But if you can't pre-order now, you really have to stock it to try to jump in once they have stock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I check the website every day. I'm like a number one fan on their Facebook page, just because I'm like the only one who interacts with their posts. I'm trying to stay on top of it, but I think that's a more sensible decision than the SP404. As much as I want it so bad, I think it's more me trying to chase something I lost, because like I said, I sold it on a previous episode. I mean, I sold it years ago, mentioned it on a previous episode. I had one, sold it, and I just want back what I think I lost, but I can't chase that feeling. I have to move forward with what I got, so, which is a lot of shit.
So. But you have to, you've got to stock the SP too, because you're gonna have to get that secondhand, right?
You can actually get it new.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You can find them new, and it's weird. I don't even know if they're still really a manufacturer, or because they're I find them new from Japan.
Okay.
So it's a weird thing. I don't think they're in like they're being produced anymore, but somebody's still making them and somebody has a lot of them. That's how I got my last one. So.
Okay. I didn't know they still made new ones.
That's what I don't know. That's the mysterious part to me. I don't know, but I do see them listed as new. And the one I got years ago, even after they stopped making them, that was new.
So and you said this is the 404A or just the 404?
404SX.
Oh, SX. Okay.
Yeah, the A is what's being sold now, which there isn't much difference between the SX and the A. The community would say, don't waste your time getting the A. Just get the SX because there's really no difference. Now, the other thing, and I'll stop talking after this, but the other thing about the SX is the output, the RCA output sucks. Like, it's trash. You have to output through the headphones. Like, if you want to route it to a speaker or route it through your signal chain, you have to route it out of the headphone jack rather than the RCA outs because it's just horrible. But I heard that's what they fixed in the A and then painted it black and green to match their TRS, which nobody wanted it for that, and charged $100 more for it. They didn't really do much, but yeah, been looking into that. Been wanting that. I'll probably get the SX sometime next year. But that's how I've been pushing up faders, man. Just trying to do me and figure out what the fuck that even means, honestly. What about you, Zara? How you been pushing faders up?
I've been messing with a new DAW. Well, it's not new. New to me.
Does Studio One know about this? Now you have to be honest.
Don't tell me it's Bitwig, man.
It is Bitwig.
Bruh, you should feel embarrassed just saying that name. Like, I don't even like the name, man. But tell us about it.
Something I've purchased came with a, I think it was Loop Cloud. They gave the free version of Bitwig, which is like 8 tracks or whatever, you know, to their user. So I was like, no, let me mess around with this. And, you know, I was able to put something down in it. It's the easiest DAW that I've used since Studio One. And so I've just been hopping in there, messing around. And I'm now to the point where I wouldn't mind having more than 8 tracks. Like, I'd be good. I think the next one up is the 16. I'm not looking to get the full version, but I'm going to, you know, Black Friday is coming up. If they have a sale on an upgrade to like the 16 track version where it's like, I don't know, 59 or 69 or something like that, I'll probably go ahead and grab it. Cause you know, if I continue to, you know, mess around with it, I might start doing content with it as well. But I don't know any other Bitwig users. I mean, they kind of I feel like when Bitwig kind of hit the scene, it was kind of at a time that we really didn't need a new DAW at that time. But, you know, I don't know. Anybody know anybody that uses it?
Yeah. I know this dude, Czar. Yeah, you. I know you. That's it.
Oh, change. That was horrible.
It is not my main DAW, but I've been enjoying messing around in it though.
I know Studio One
that
is jealous.
So bad. I know, right? It ain't my main thing, but I enjoy messing around with it when I got time.
Right. That is exactly how that sounded. I haven't used it, but an old church member from when I lived in Virginia reached out to me because somebody who plays piano, I forgot who she said, but who he said it was, but they needed a software to do backing tracks with. And I was like, you know, they weren't trying to spend too much money. So I did some research and I suggested Ableton, but I've mentioned that it's super pricey. Depending on what you're looking for. And that honestly, Bitwig, I suggested to them, not having used it, I, you know, did some research, watched some YouTube videos on it and suggested it because it seemed easy to use. The price point is not bad, better than Ableton. And it would do the minimal of what she was looking for is what she was looking for, you know, maybe a drum track or a backing piano or something during church service. So I can imagine it wouldn't be anything too complicated, something she could learn quickly, because that's the other thing about Ableton. It takes a learning curve. So I did mention it to somebody, and I did mention it knowing that this might actually be good for that that appliance. So I don't know. I should reach back out to see if what they ended up choosing, and if they chose Bitwig, how they like it.
Yeah, I will point out that one thing that really surprised me is that I've got a fader port, a PreSonus fader port 8 that I use as my control surface, which obviously integrates really well with Studio One. I can use it with Pro Tools. I can use it with Logic, but I have to turn it off and turn it back on to reboot it into that Logic mode or what's that? Huey protocol for Pro Tools. But Bitwig, it functions perfectly with Bitwig. I don't have to do anything. So I don't know, something about, I guess, the coding in Bitwig, my transport controls, like everything works perfectly with Bitwig on the fader port 8 without me changing anything. So I was really surprised by that, because I can't use it when I'm in Logic and I'm too lazy to reboot the thing every time I'm in Logic, which isn't that much anyway. So, because when I go back to Studio One, I'm gonna have to turn it off, hold this button, turn it back on for it to boot back up to work with Studio One. So I just leave it in Studio One mode all the time. But seeing that it works perfectly with Bitwig was really surprising to me.
That's interesting.
What about you, O'Shea? How you been pushing faders up?
Man, I finally finished, if y'all remember from an episode or two ago, I had been spending all this time importing and tagging all my loops and samples inside of a machine. So I finally finished that. It's greatly improved my workflow. Because when I want to flip through, you know what I'm saying, loops and samples, I can actually listen to like all my demo beats from like construction kits and loop packs I had, where I can just browse for it on the hardware. And then when I find a demo beat that I like, and let's say, hey, I want the piano from that to chop up, it's just real easy. It just improved my workflow. I can just go grab it real quick. So I finished up that. Been collaborating with Lacey Mason Music again. So excited about what we got going on. And just finished up tracking, mixing, and mastering a spoken word project by two artists named Cam Speaks and AU here in Nashville. So I'm excited about that. Yeah, so that's really it for me. But I'm ready to hear what Pat...
What'd you use for that, to record the spoken word?
Oh.
I'm just curious. Like, what mic did you use for voiceover?
Oh, okay. I was like, Logic? Like... Nah, I use my C214 going into the Apollo with the API Vision Channel Strip pre in Unison.
Gotcha. But yes. Okay.
So it's a total of 10 tracks. I mastered all 10 of them. I mixed and mastered all 10, and then I only tracked maybe like three or four of them. So excited about that. Yeah. Pat, what you got going on? Because every time you say something, man, I feel motivated to, you know what I'm saying, step my game up. I feel like I'm never doing enough, man.
Nothing.
Well, I guess I'm doing okay.
Yeah, I've been chilling. Honestly, I ain't going to say, well, I think struggling is a bad word, but I just ain't been motivated to do much. So I just
Are you burnt out?
No, I don't think I'm burnt out. I just don't have any urges. When I do get, I kind of think it's, I probably got a little bit too much time right now. So when I sit down, I'm too productive. It don't take me long to do something, so I'm done. And then it's like, okay, well, what's next? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if I'm done with everything, then the days when I probably could be doing something extra, I'm like, I don't even touch my computer at all.
do you have any specific production exercises you do to kind of get you out of your normal routine that might help with that, you know, kind of?
Well, I think I just don't have no urge to create sometimes.
Gotcha.
Which is, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a bad thing. I guess from a work ethic standpoint, it is. Because it's probably the least I've wanted to do music. So.
No, it's probably just, you know, like any other thing that you enjoy or brings pleasure, is just sometimes you're just not feeling it. Like, you're not, you love food, but you're not always hungry, you know?
Dang! That was a good one. You love food, but you ain't always hungry. Dang.
That's deep.
Yeah, that is.
Man.
Okay, Desiree, what you been on over there? We need to check in your drawers over there in your room.
No.
Whatever that meant.
Like your drawers to the desk or something.
No, no. Oh, I knew what drawer you, I know you didn't say drawers. I knew what you meant, but I was, anyway. But not hearing you say that just kind of made me think, like, when we talk about the whole production, like, because artists, we want to feel inspired, and finding that balance between working when inspiration hit or being disciplined and being able to work whether you're inspired or not. So I'm wondering, I wonder for people that are signed to record deals and publishing deals, if they have that luxury of, oh, I'm not feeling it today, and just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, because they got money for them, like, to do that. I mean, I can't, that's kind of the benefit of it.
Yeah, you so got a can, deal.
Yeah, they can burn themselves out.
Gotcha.
I would think so. If I can look in my bank account and say, okay, well, my bills paid for the next year. You think, I mean, why? Think of it like this. If they're not creating, then that's why a lot of times you see, well, I know I see producers and songwriters, they do like a whole week or something, and they be like locked in the studio, and then they have a week where they just, you see them in different cities, or they out partying with their friends. Because it's almost like, I mean, the things I would stress about is taken care of, so why even overwork myself?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like being paid. I like to imagine it as like, you know, you've been paid more or less up front to complete a project in X amount of time. You will hopefully understand your workflow by that time. So you know when you need to push it. You know when you need to back off. You know when you need to do like a little bit of both. And you have the luxury. That's because I think that's what we're all kind of reaching for, that luxury to make that decision. That doesn't have to do with the clock. Like I appreciate my job. And at this point, it's just like, now I'm just annoyed by the little things. Like punching a clock is annoying. It's just annoying. Yeah. Like, well, just having to be on a time constraint.
See, punching a clock, you working for your money. And in a creator's, well, for the people who get advances, they get their money up front before they actually do the work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm sure that's a whole lot easier. It's so much easier to create. You already got the money.
I think it has its pros and cons.
So you don't think you would smile
going to Slack too?
Yeah, but you don't think you would be smiling going to work if your job paid? Let's say your job right now paid you,
but it's
year,
more than that, though.
Your salary now, and they say, "Oh, we just need you to come to work every day." You'd be smiling every day.
I don't know if you get the best work out of me, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm
right,
saying.
Right, but still, you got, in other words, what I'm saying is you're already being paid for it. It's already there.
But
there's no
going,
restrictions. Nothing.
That's
extra.
Going to backfire. That's going to backfire on some people. Because I was talking about this. I think I told you I was kind of at a potential career pivot like now. And so I was speaking with this company, and they were like, it's so much flexibility, you know, in the schedule, but it's so much to be done. And it was like, that's a double-edged sword, because I've experienced where It's like I got all this stuff done early and I had time to relax. And then I've experienced where I'm like, oh, I got time. Oh, I got time. I got time. And then before you know it, you're stressed out 2 days working 12, 14 hours a day because you slacked off. So I think
it's a mentality thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mentality and discipline is like it'll work for some people. For some people, it would be disastrous.
Yeah, you pay most people before their payday and you're not going to come back to work.
Yeah. Hit you with the Dave Chappelle. I'm rich.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still see that perspective too, though. Like, yeah, I got the money. I don't mind showing up versus I ain't even got the money yet. Now I have to prove myself. Having the money means you've already proven yourself worthy of that money versus clocking in. You got to exchange the energy first. Pat, are you going to tell us the announcement that you withheld last time? Are you going
to
be?
No, it's not time yet.
Oh my gosh.
I might do it on the Success Podcast.
That would be appropriate.
That very appropriate. We can celebrate your success while we talk about success.
I might announce it at the end because I might want to say some stuff.
Oh my gosh.
I'll tell y'all now once we get done recording though.
Okay. That's really all I want at this point now. Yeah. Zara, you gotta tell us your big pushing up phase. You want go and talk about some new doll you're using, but you're not even talking about the even bigger fader that you have pushed to the top.
Yeah. So I thought I did mention this on the podcast, but maybe I didn't. But even if I didn't mention it before, it wasn't official then, but it is official now that I'm the new chair of the Nashville AES chapter.
Watch out now.
That's a big deal, Zar. Congratulations.
Yeah.
For real.
Now tell us, why is that a big deal? Or what are some of the reasons that that's pretty significant?
Well, they're wanting to go in a, almost to say, new direction of things that have, or the way that it has been ran, and they want more diversity in there. They want younger minds in there. And, yeah, really see what can just some, what's that term? New
blood?
Yeah, yeah. What some new blood can do just, you know, for the organization.
Cool. Hey, we're excited for you, man. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, we've already canceled two events because of COVID, but yeah.
That's COVID's fault, not your fault.
Yeah. But I've got some ideas. I've already very, very briefly spoken to Mimi and Music Queen about collaborating on some stuff too. And yeah, we'll see what we can make happen.
I like
nice.
It. I like it
That's
a lot.
That's what you do. That's exactly what you do.
I'm going to move into our main topic here discussing T-Pain and did he ruin music? So to set this up, so this comes from the docuseries This Is Pop on Netflix. It's episode 2, just titled Auto-Tune, that goes over the origin of Auto-Tune. And T-Pain discusses an incident where I think it says a 2013 BET Awards that he was on a plane headed there. And it says the flight attendant came and got him and told him Usher wants to speak to him. And so he goes back there to talk to Usher and says, Usher basically tells him, you know, you ruined music, right? And for T-Pain, he said that this started, I think it's like a 4-year depression for him and made him really think or question himself, like, did he ruin music? But yeah, what are y'all thoughts on that? Do you think that T-Pain ruined music?
Not at all.
That's it.
Oh, we have mad hesitation in the building. Speak now.
Nah, I wasn't hesitating. I was Googling something about Usher and T-Pain. Nah, he definitely did not
same
ruin
girl. They did music. Same girl together. Wait a minute. Oh, Usher ain't shit. I'm no longer a fan.
I feel like when did this alleged event happen?
I just
he just said no,
the 2013 no. BET Awards.
Oh, and my fuck. Okay,
so same girl came out when?
O'Shea, you already on Google.
Man, you really got us on our Googles. That was R. Kelly and Usher.
It was, and T-Pain, yeah. I guess, was a featured artist on R. Kelly's song. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's R. Not Kelly a... and Usher.
It's a terrible time to bring
up. But yeah, I don't think he ruined music. I think, you know, obviously he changed it, but I feel like when you become so comfortable in how we used to do things, you'll never embrace, you know, the future. Cause there's people right now that probably say Lil Baby ruined music. And it's like, it's different. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't feel like you ruined it.
Who has anyone that you can think of? I can't think of anybody off the top of my head right now that has really changed the game like T-Pain did, though.
Well, no. Nobody on his level.
No.
Who'd you say?
I would say maybe Lil Jon, when you talk about bringing a new sound, because he kind of brought that crunk hip-hop. At least I don't recall hearing that sort of rock hip hop mix, which brought, I think, Party Like a Rockstar, which was a great song, I think. It kind of stuck, kind of didn't. But the thing about what T-Pain did is what he did back then really stuck. It sticks to this day, to where nobody cares if something's auto-tuned. In a good portion of rap music, it's like part of the catchiness, like, ooh, that was auto-tune, like, I liked that. It's a freaking TikTok filter you can use on your voice.
Yeah. I mean, not to mention the app that T-Pain created, you know what I'm saying? An actual T-Pain auto-tune app.
So I don't think he ruined music, I think is egregious, because I like how the documentary said, like, part of creativity is using tools that they weren't intended to be used. Auto-tune was already in the game, and Cher was really one of the first mainstream artists to use it fully, or have it used fully in one of her songs, a hit song. So I don't know, I'm kind of looking and understanding what Usher did. I'm like, that's just horrible timing to tell somebody something like that. Like, hey, you're going to tell someone to go get somebody to bring them to the back to tell them, hey, you know, I think you ruined the world. I think you're the cause of all of the industry's problems, right? And like, that's a horrible time to tell somebody that. Yeah.
Well, since everybody agreed, I guess I need to
be the antagonist in the group. Go ahead.
Well, let me say this. First of all, he didn't ruin it. But if I had to think about where Usher was coming from, being that he was, I guess you would call him a soul R&B singer.
Oh, hold.
I'm like pop R&B.
Hold that thought. I guess let me be specific. 'Cause Usher, he says that Usher said, you ruined music for real singers.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Okay.
That's where I was going.
Okay. So yeah, go ahead.
So I guess you would consider Usher a real singer.
Yeah.
So, which I'm pretty sure, whether he knows it or not, they were using auto-tune on his vocal, especially when he was a child. He just didn't know. And he probably was getting less work because of T-Pain. And most real singers probably were. Because around that time, T-Pain was on every hook, whether it was R&B or hip hop.
Yeah, he had a run, man.
Yeah, he was writing hooks and being featured on everybody's song. Like, I remember when he came to TSU for homecoming, and it was so amazing to me. He did a whole hour and a half set of just his feature records. He didn't even do his music until crazy. The end of the show. I'm like, this man just ran off like 30 songs that he was featured on. So, I mean, I guess him ruining music for real singers, no. He just gave people another option. Because I think even still with real singers, it's still hard because everybody's voice is not for everybody's song. Mm-hmm. But what auto-tune does that I think a lot of people don't really give it credit for, auto-tune, for the most part, can be used on a variety of different genres. Mm-hmm. Like as far as
applications.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you know what?
Even the hard auto-tune, it could be used on anything.
I think we need to back up though.
Why you say that?
Like, because like auto-tune has become this, I don't know if ubiquitous is the right word, but it's become this thing that, to be honest, people don't really understand what it is, right? Like to singers, especially young singers, auto-tune sounds like a curse word to them. It's like, hey, you know what I'm saying? Gotta tune your vocal, blah, blah. They don't really understand. So I think...
They think it's an insult, really.
Yeah. So not to insult the intelligence of our listeners, but let's just be clear and just say what auto-tune is. Because to be honest, some people don't understand what it is.
Well, first, everybody use auto-tune. Sorry.
No. I disagree with you. I believe...
Name somebody who don't.
Man, if you slow your roll.
And I don't want to hear nobody before.
It's not
94.
It's going to be real easy, but it's cool. Like it's a technicality. Everybody doesn't use auto-tune, but I can't think of an engineer that does not use some form of pitch correction. And that's what we need to talk about, because I don't think people understand. Like they come to the studio, hey, can you throw that auto-tune on my voice? Hey, I mean, hey, what do you mean? You mean auto-tune?
Pitch correction,
you mean waves?
Auto-tune, it's the same.
I know, but that's the point
okay,
I'm making.
Okay,
I know
right.
what you
let's,
meant.
Let's break down auto-tune before these folks go back and forth another 18 times. So auto-tune pitch correction is taking somebody's vocal performance and putting it in tune. If you've been in the band, if you played in a band, you know what being in tune means. Everybody needs to be on the same pitch, the same frequency, so that when y'all play together, it's harmonious. Nobody's sharp, nobody's flat. And so that's what auto-tune is. And auto-tune is it's like Kleenex, you know. Auto-tune is
a brand.
Yeah. Right. Whereas pitch correction is something you do.
The process.
Yeah, right. Process. So... Yeah, well, I do think a lot of people have a misconception of auto-tune, because when they say auto-tune, you automatically think, oh, T-Pain, robotic voice. Exactly. But auto-tune is a tool used in mixing and sometimes mastering across all genres. And even like we said before, it's been used on artists, but it's kind of, that's why I was saying, like, it's an insult to artists to say I had to auto-tune your voice, because then that is saying you don't sing that well. And kind of ushered in this new age, which we're kind of seeing today, where you don't really have to be that talented. You know, you don't have to be the best singer to be able to get a real singing deal, because you have a lot of tools that can enhance your voice.
But that's
so
that's another thing too, though. Like, just because your vocals require tuning does not mean you can't sing that good. There are some super dope singers who vocals still need to be pitch corrected a little bit. Very few people got perfect pitch that can just sing that thing like don't touch nothing, right? So, and that's the thing I think that younger artists need to understand going into the studio. An engineer tuning or pitch correcting your vocals, depending on how much they do it, doesn't mean you're not a good singer, right? It's like, you know what I'm saying? So, I think T-Pain, I don't think he personally ruined music. I think his creativity had an impact that was so much bigger than him that I can see how it can be perceived as ruining the industry, not because of his personal music, but because of everything else it opened up. For example, I know people that watch basketball that say Steph Curry ruined the NBA. They say LeBron James ruined the NBA. And what they mean by that is, like, these players have changed the way the game is played, have changed the way the rules are in the game. So it's like, that's what that's what, giving Usher the benefit of the doubt, I'm going on a ledge and saying maybe this is what he meant by that, is that it's changed the game.
Let's so, also be clear that...
And then Usher uses auto-tune now, so shut up.
Yeah, I mean...
yeah, let's...
He
let's
went be... right after that and made OMG.
And that's why Usher ain't shit. Not for voicing his opinion, but for the way he did it. And then ran right behind him and did the same thing.
Let's also be clear that, so we're talking about auto-tune as pitch correction, but we're also talking about auto-tune as an effect, which is what T-Pain doesn't use auto-tune for pitch correction. It's the effect.
That's very good to distinguish, because like Desiree said, a lot of artists, if they don't know it, they feel offended by it, but it's like, hey, you know what I'm saying? Especially rappers, probably more than singers. Rappers use auto-tune as a
he still had to use the pitch correction, because even when you had the effect on, if you don't sing it right, you hit wrong notes.
Right.
You still need to be corrected.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying like the actual correction part isn't what made him famous, isn't what we're talking about. It's the sound, the creative thing, right? Like Pat, Zara, Desiree, I admit, one of my opportunities to grow as an engineer, pitch correction is not my thing. Do not like doing it. I'll admit I'm not very good at it, right? But it's one of those things where if you do it right, most people won't even know you ever did it. That's the thing about pitch correction. Unless you're doing it as an effect, you don't want people to know that you corrected the vocals, right? So if you're nice at it, they won't.
And that just is, I think, the whole theory of mixing and mastering, too. Like, you have these tools to enhance the sound, and then you want it to be done well enough to where it sounds like that's how it sounded from the first time you recorded it, when we all know it was mixed. But I can see where the effect of auto-tune, whether it was used as an effect or a tool to improve a vocal performance, is that when you use it and don't really tell anybody, now the artist thinks they can sing when maybe they can't, when really some lessons will help, because even people forget about auto-tune, which is why it was surprised me when people were like, oh, T-Pain can actually sing. I'm like, well, duh, he can sing. Because like Pat said, you still have to hit the note mostly. Mm-hmm. If you hit a wrong note, it's an algorithm. It's going to tune it to the note it thinks you were trying to hit. So if you're full of wrong notes already, you're going to be tuned to even wronger notes, and it's just going to sound bad. So yes, he could sing when he applied the auto-tune effect. That's why it works so well, in my opinion. And I'm a hard T-Pain fan. I loved I'm Sprung from the moment I heard it. I played it for other people, and people were like, what is this? I'm like, this is like the hottest shit in the world. What?
Yeah.
I got it off LimeWire and everything.
And it was to amazing. Be clear, he recorded that song without auto-tune. And he applied it to that song. So he didn't even technically use it. Mm-hmm. He just applied it to his vocals, which I'm pretty sure he had the pitch correct. Once he applied the effect. And then I'm pretty sure after that, he learned how to sing with it on live. Because people think that's easy as well. No, that is hard as well. That is hard to do. Mm-hmm. No, we cannot go get the homeless man off the street and say, hey, sing on auto-tune. You can't do it. It's not that easy.
It's not a copy and paste sort of thing. It still is a process and a craft to perfect. And I think that's where maybe Usher was also meaning, like, you've made it easy for non-talented people, because now they all know they can just use auto-tune and become equally famous without doing half the work. But also, sometimes artists aren't encouraged to improve because you've already done it post-production. So like, I don't know. Shay, I don't mean to put this person on blast, but when you sent me those vocals for that one artist.
I was going to say, don't say their name.
I don't remember their name, so I can't even reiterate.
Calling O'Shea, you talked about me.
She probably don't even listen to this.
I think she do, but it's all good. Keep going.
Okay.
And you just said it's a girl.
I know, right?
So what? Okay.
This ambiguous person.
I didn't do anything wrong. Desiree didn't do anything wrong. It fits with the topic. Keep going.
And she needs to know this. Hell, she was so off pitch that she was singing in another key, different from the beat. And I've come across that with other artists I've worked with where it's just like, you're just kind of tone deaf. Because that could be a byproduct of auto-tune and always having someone tune your vocals. You're like, oh yeah, I can sing it perfect. And I heard this from my old mentor that when an artist is able to perform to a perfected track, it does sometimes help them perform better and sing better. But other times, what I've more so experienced is that they can't even find a key to the song. And so when I was trying to tune those vocals, I'm like, it's not hitting. It's not in tune. And then I had to transpose it down a whole, tone. I don't think it was a semi-step. I had to go down two semi-steps. I had to go down a whole step to get the vocal in tune with the song. I'm like, she was not even in the same key. And that's where I'm like, that's where the scary part is. You know what I mean? And I think if she wants to do better as a performing artist, she would need to know that. You know what I mean? But hey, they just want to get famous real quick. But I do think that's a hindrance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think... Oh, my fault. Go ahead, Zar.
Well, I was going to say, Pat, you said he applied it to that song. Let's also talk about the dedication that T-Pain went through to discover the auto-tune effect. Because he said he went through every cracked plug-in. He said he went through... was it Cher? He said he heard... Mm-hmm. First and wanted to know what that was, and
it was a J-Lo song. No.
He said it was on the commercial or something.
Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. And he just—I mean, I don't know how long it took him. Did he say how long it took him to find it?
He didn't say exactly how long, but he said the song was 2 years old when it came out.
Man, I mean, to go through all that just to find. And not only did he say he was going through every cracked plug-in, he was going through all the presets too. He said
correct.
That's patience, and I felt that. I felt and that so
the
hard.
Song was still relevant 2 years later.
That's a message in and of itself, right there, man. Like Jason
Eskridge,
he
was great
said,
before he even started.
Yeah, Jason Eskridge always said, "Good music never dies, man." Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah, he was great before he even started. Like to even write a song that relevant 2 years later.
Yeah. So,
but let me say this. The listeners and the fans are the reason for auto-tune being used. Because for some reason, as listeners, we expect to hear perfect pitch. Mm-hmm. Whereas all those soul singers in the 60s that we all love so much, Motown's finest, Aretha Franklin, they did not have no auto-tune.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
They were singing without it. And if they messed up, you had to turn the tape up and start all the way over again.
Yep.
So when you want to talk bad about what is new school or old school, the old school people, like, they were really dedicated to their craft. And they were perfectionists at being good in the studio.
Facts.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but also... One thing about great music is the mistakes. You think that there are mistakes in those songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are beautiful mistakes.
I think a good example of kind of that old school Motown feel, like, and I feel like
you're about to say, go ahead.
You know, the artist I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a particular artist. Let me first say, I'm a fan. I'm a Mary J. Blige fan. But there are many people, including me, who will say Mary J. Blige is not the best singer. Like, when you listen to her actual, like, tone and pitch, like, it ain't, like, your squeaky clean, perfect thing. But it's like, she sings with so much emotion and so much conviction that it's like, for me, that washes over whatever little imperfections are in her voice, because she's amazing. Mm-hmm. And she's a songwriter, which that just takes it to another level, right? So it's like, at the end of the day, does pitch matter? Yes. But you can have perfect pitch, right? Your vocals can be tuned perfectly and it sounds like a soulless, you know, lacking emotion. It could still be whack, right? So when we
make a lot of people's complaint about Silk Sonic.
About who?
Silk Sonic.
Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak.
Yeah. A lot of people say they love their music, but it's too perfect.
Really?
Yeah,
it doesn't have any flaws in it.
Mm.
Like, listen to it. There's no flaws in it. And it, the era they're mimicking, there was flaws in the music. Whereas they're mimicking that era, but it sounds perfect.
It makes it sound more human.
Yeah,
with the flaws.
But like the balance said, it's still pitch still matters, because if the flaws were to make or break, Desiree would have never shared that story. She just shared, you know what I'm saying? Because it was like, hey, here's an example where flaws didn't make the song better. You know what I'm saying? So it's all about balance. Like Kevin Shine said, man, at the end of the day, it's about the music. It's about the song. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I definitely agree with him on that particular point.
Yeah, I was saying it's just a tool.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say it's just a tool. My personal favorite, I love affecting vocals with different stuff. Vocoders are my thing. So I like a thing like auto-tune, but it's just kind of like how the documentary said, it's a tool. You can use it for good, bad, ugly, whatever.
Yeah, I'm more accepting of it now.
Mm-hmm.
I think because I couldn't stand it, and I still don't fully like it, but it does sound good to me on certain songs in certain situations. But my thing for a long time was that when everyone else started using auto-tune as an effect, to me, you couldn't understand what was being said.
Oh,
and it just, me listening to these songs with all this auto-tune, I couldn't even understand the lyrics. I'm like, what is this?
Now, are you talking about rap songs?
Yeah, I'm talking about rap. Yeah.
Yeah, and don't let them be mumble rappers either. I can't even do it right. That shit is so muffled.
But I mean, now rap music I hear now with auto-tune on it, I can understand the vocals at least. Whereas, I don't know, 10 years ago it was like, I don't even know what they're saying.
Well, because they was more so just trying to do the melody.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of rappers understood what they were doing. So they didn't know how to put the melody in their words versus trying to rap and sing at the same time. Because that's what they was trying to do. They was trying to rap and sing. Whereas a lot of rappers now, like, I think the best example I got is like Lil Baby. Like, if you really listen to how he's rapping, like, he's putting specific melody tones in what he's saying just by how he's saying the words and the syllables.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely an art to it if you know how to do it. Because I'm pretty sure you take the auto-tune off of him, you're still going to hear the melody and what he's doing. The auto-tune just gives it a more polished sound.
And that even opens up the door for the new conversation, because there's a new wave of rappers with this auto-tune thing where it's like, it's now becoming the expected thing. Like, to be honest, like, I mean, you got Rod Wave, you got Roddy Ricch, you got...
They're singing. Rod Wave can sing and Roddy Ricch can sing. They're singing.
It's still rap though. It's like, So how do, so who would you distinguish them from? So you, so the way they,
I mean, T-Pain was rapping.
Well, yeah. Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Rapper turned singer.
Rapper turned singer, yeah. I think, so my issue as far as with, you know, how I feel about auto-tune as an effect, I don't feel no kind of way about, like Desiree said, it's a tool. It's neither good or evil. I think there are some times when I get tired of, you know, whenever I do turn on, you know, the hip hop station, that like I can't tell one artist from another. So in that sense, it's kind of like, I'm like, all right, I feel you, Jay. I feel you when you say death of auto-tune. Okay, I get it. But it's not auto-tune's fault. You know what I'm saying? Like that whole rant T-Pain went on about being original. Like, it ain't auto-tune fault. You use auto-tune and still, in my opinion, carve your own little niche. Like, I don't think Lil Baby sounds like anybody else right now. You know what I'm saying? But he's using auto-tune. Then there's some other dope artists that are using auto-tune that sound similar. It don't mean they're not dope. It's just like you haven't distinguished yourself from that other artist.
Yeah, I agree with you, because so much of music to me is having a distinguishable voice. And it's like I know someone in LA that sings, and she doesn't have the best voice to me, but she has a very distinctive, like I know her voice when I hear it. Mm-hmm. And with everybody using auto-tune, a lot of these people I can't tell apart.
Nah, for real. I came across a neo soul singer the other day on YouTube, and I just followed her because I like the imagery she used on her videos. She sounds just like SZA. She sounds just like most people, you know, that high pitch airy voice. Like, they, you know, I'm like, pretty girl, cool imagery. I like the vibe, but she doesn't sound anything different. That's something I've learned in my vocal lessons too, as we talk about affecting vocals in real singers, is that a real singer, I think now, is somebody who can tell a story with a melody. And that's what we love about most of the artists that we listen to, is that we're hearing something that's touching us in a special way. And the best singer isn't always that. Like, I think Celine Dion has a beautiful voice, one of the best singers, I think. But her, and some of her songs I do really enjoy, but her music doesn't move me as much as hearing Kevin Gates, who is also a very melodic lyricist, but and probably really doesn't sing that well, but I like his stories. I like how his music moves me. So I don't know, the ability to sing still starts at that artist's ability to, you know, tell a story. Mm-hmm. That isn't always the best singer. Again, why I think Usher was hating, because he was super commercial at that time and unoriginal. Ugh. Herpes having motherfucker.
Oh my
god. Damn.
Oh my god.
Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, we ain't never gonna get Usher on the show now.
Oh yeah, because we were in line for that for sure.
Why not?
I did never think of it from Pat's perspective, where saying that, you know, likely he was getting less work because T-Pain was taking over, and even probably then Usher was probably charging more than T-Pain.
Probably. That's why I'm like, where'd that come from? Like, you know what, too? I think you can also tie this back to an episode we talked about a while ago, talking about producing and artificial intelligence, is that a lot of these tools that come out give people who otherwise didn't have like a creative talent, but might have creative ideas to be able to get those ideas out. So that could also be where Usher was coming from, where like he's worked this hard since he was a kid and been in the industry and is probably taking lessons, taking dance lessons. People were likening him to Michael Jackson. Like, you know, he's just a hard worker. Now here comes T-Pain throws the auto tune all the way to zero, and he's a sensation. He's like, bruh, are you serious? You know, kind of like Andre 3000 said about some of these new rappers. Like, why did I work that hard on any of my songs? You know, that's just.
And I think T-Pain said it himself, if I'm not mistaken, in that episode, is that, you know, if he wouldn't have done it, someone else would have done it.
Sure.
And the music industry is such a copycat industry that if there was a hit song that came out right now that had no music, it was just a drum beat, even just a kick and a snare, and it went number one, other people would start doing that.
I said, that's the hottest shit, bro. Like, wow.
I mean, it is such a copycat industry. So yeah, absolutely, someone else, you know, would have done it. And but, you know, I'm not mad at T-Pain for getting his bag, though.
Not at all.
I'm mad at everyone else. That's, I don't want to say the word copy. I'll go ahead and say it. The hell, copying him and using that, and just now we're, you know, we're flooded with it on every song we hear.
Now, how would you have reacted? So I guess, you know, final question, do your peers' opinions influence you? So, and I guess making it personal, so Czar, how would you feel if, you know what I'm saying, man, you produced this new song, you gave it to Pat, you know, Pat went out of his way and to be like, hey, come here real quick, cuz, like, hey, I heard that new song you put out, that drink trash, man, you making, like, you effing it up for all the producers out there because you using Studio One. Like, and of course, I'm being somewhat facetious right now.
No,
but
I feel you. I'm able to take criticism, and I mean, to me, that's just his opinion. So it wouldn't affect me. I mean, I would, if he doesn't like it, I mean, I'm going to sit down with Pat and find out why. I want to dig deeper into why he feels that way. But he's not going to hurt my feelings, because it's, yeah, everyone has different opinions on stuff. And I guess I will also say that I respect Pat too. Now, if if it's someone I don't respect, then I'm not digging deeper in that conversation about it. I'll add that too.
That's fair.
I listen and ignore everything or what my peers say.
So difficult. So freaking difficult, I swear.
Why you say that? Listen and ignore?
Yes. What does that even mean?
I listen to it, but at the same time, I ignore it as well. And what I mean by that is, if I feel like it's constructive, I take it into account in what I'm doing. But I also ignore it because I don't want it to affect my process to continue to create.
I guess that makes sense.
Because, I mean, sometimes people can tell, like, I know sometimes when I make a track and I might send it to Mimi or whatever, she'll give me constructive criticism. And then at that moment, I got a choice. Either I make the change she suggested, or I'd be like, man, I see what you're saying, Mimi, but nah, I like what I did. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I could change just one thing. But because I've also had to send her something, and then she give me constructive criticism, and then now I can't expand on what she told me to do because now I'm overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because fair. I've applied what she said to me to my heart versus my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm not even able to improve it. It's stuck. So that's where my listening and ignore come from.
Sure. Yeah, the opinions of my peers definitely influence me. Now, influence doesn't necessarily mean change, right, or dictate. You know, like certain people, like Pat, like I respect his opinion on, like, cause I like his music. You know what I'm saying? So it's not just like, oh, that's my co-host on the podcast. It's like, nah, I respect his taste cause I like his music. Even the stuff that he don't feel that good about it, I'm still like, yo, that's the, you know, that's the sugar honey iced tea. So I hate the, to dash and run it on y'all, but I am supposed to be in another meeting at this very moment.
All right.
Beautiful people, love y'all. Listeners, love y'all too, even though I don't know you. Peace.
Desiree?
I used to really bad. That's probably why I'm just now getting to the point I'm at now. It just kind of just comes from, you know, thinking that what I do doesn't have a place or isn't good enough. But how I learned with T-Pain's story of how he found autotune, and even how Pat said, like, taking criticism, listening to it with your mind, but not taking it to heart. You do have to, I have learned to balance that. And I'm pretty good at taking criticism to make a production better, because I understand, like, you kind of got to get a third perspective. But I would used to be like, okay, I need to make a trap beat, and I just don't do trap beats. I just, that's not something that comes natural. And I used to feel bad about that. Like, oh, what I make is like not akin to what other people might make. But then trying to also chase that and then just having a difficult time. So definitely have learned to not follow the wave and really create your own. And since I started doing that, I've gotten nothing but good feedback. I mean, other than people who give no feedback, the feedback I have gotten has been good. So that makes me feel good. Not only that, that who I'm showing to likes it, you know, that's kind of the ego there, but it's actually something that feels good to me. And then I'm actually able to share like this gift and being able to let that spirit kind of shine through, instead of just saying, you know, I'm gonna make a trap beat because that's what everyone's making, or I'm going to make a ballad or R&B soul trap beat because that's just what everyone's doing. And, you know, that's how T-Pain got to be who he is. That's how almost everyone in that, they just did them, period. And actually watching that whole series is kind of about people who did them and didn't try to stick with what the quote unquote status quo was at that time. That's how you,
right.
So you change.
Did you watch the country music episode?
No.
Mm-mm. Have you, Pat?
Mm-mm.
It's, and I can't even remember the names now, but I'll just say that one was a good one too. Cause there's people who stepped in and, maybe Taylor Swift was one of them. I can't remember some of the other names, but there was people who stepped in to the country music lane that wasn't traditional country music, and everyone hated them for it, but they continue to do them, and now they're, you know, everyone loves them.
Yeah, Taylor Swift is one of them.
And I can't remember the older, I mean, one of them was, it might have been Shania Twain or Dolly
Parton.
They did
Garth Brooks like that too.
But it was crazy. Just, it was interesting to see the, you know, the feedback that.
Or not Garth Brooks, Billy Ray Cyrus.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, that
he
was.
Did him like that too.
The episode starts out talking about old country road and like what is country music.
Like, wow.
You have to. That was
a good episode.
Let's check that one out. Yeah, that whole series I think is pretty good. Especially for music enthusiasts and just understanding like the culture behind the industry. It's good to know. Good information.
Definitely. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. Don't forget to get into our Facebook group to get the information about the giveaway, because that will be up pretty soon. All right. I'm Czar.
I'm Pat.
I'm Desiree.
And we'll catch y'all next episode.
Peace.
Noise. Noise. Hey, Faders Up podcast listeners. Hey, thank you so much for listening to today's episode, but let's keep the discussion going. Join our Facebook group at Faders Up Podcast to share your thoughts and opinions on today's topics and interact directly with the cast.